It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And we're back. For you all, it's been a week. For us, it has been maybe 2 minutes.
Maybe.
I think that's being generous. It was, which is why we look exactly the same. Go ahead. Watch the old one again. And then immediately watch this and you'll see exactly the same.
It'll be like nothing happened.
Except for one Easter egg in the background of William's image.
Yeah.
See if you can spot it. I can't.
They'll never find it.
Okay. What's your favorite fruit?
I think strawberries are hands down my favorite fruit.
Strawberries are really good. Strawberries are really good.
And that's saying something because I like all kinds of fruit. I love fruit in general, but strawberries are probably the top.
It
and have been since I was a kid.
Fruit, and maybe this is true for vegetable. I notice it more with fruit. Quality almost matters more than variety of fruit. Like a really good pear is better to me than a mediocre strawberry. But if we're saying equal quality, like if you're getting the perfect ripeness and sweetness, yeah, strawberries might be a contender. Although in general, blueberries are also big for me. A lot of the berry family, raspberries also very big. Berries are pretty big for me. And this, again, might be a little bit of my childhood. And this is not a hard one to come by, which is neat. Because, it's hard to get a real good strawberry, sadly, unless you go out to the places and pick them yourself and things. A green grape. A real firm and sweet green grape. Especially if they're cold. I really like them.
Yeah, I like pretty much all varieties of grapes. And apples, too. Yeah. I love apples.
See, apples, well, I mean, I like apples. Conceptually, I'm not opposed to much any fruit, but there's a lot of shitty apples. And there's also such a variety.
Yeah,
quite a variety. It's a little bit like saying I like wine, because I do like wine, but there are plenty of wines I don't like. And same thing with that. I like apples, but there are some apples I'm not that into, or some apples I'd have to be in the right mood for, and things like that. Yeah, because apples are really good. I bring up pears because I love pears.
I do too.
But pears are so hard to deal with. Pears, like avocados, are like not ripe, not ripe, not ripe. Up, it's too late. It's moldy and rotten and falling apart. We get them probably 2-3 times a year when it really kicks in season-wise. And if we're lucky, we eat half of them because we just miss it. We just miss the 3-minute window when they are just ripe and delicious. But same thing with avocados. I love a good avocado, but I'm really bad at telling it. It's like, no, it's not ripe. It's not ripe. It's not ripe. Oh, that's mold. Great.
We have a pear tree, a couple pear trees. And
is English not your first language?
What do you mean?
I mean, if you have two pear trees, which I'm assuming is what you were saying, you have two pear trees. How did your brain not
a pair of
go
pear
to
trees?
Exactly? It was sitting right there. Sorry, people. I'm a little overly excited. I am at the end of my rope with this guy. I normally only got to deal with him hour out of the week, and now I got this shit. So I am edgy.
I never pear trees.
That's awesome.
I never really thought of the fact, because I think we used to have three, and I think I really thought about how we only have two now.
Pear trees is like the name of my new acoustic post-rock group.
Anyway.
And it's even fun because they're spelled different. Like right. Visually, well, that's cute as well.
It's hard to know on the tree too. It's also hard to know when they're ripe. And you wait, and then they fall off onto the graft. Like, I waited too long.
Pears especially. They also, you can sometimes get away with that with apples sometimes, but not so much pears.
Pears. No. So, but the pears that, I mean, when you can get one at just the right time off the tree, they're really good. But and I think this reason we had more than one was because we had to have more than one or else they had big cross.
Yeah. I still have never fully understood how that works, but yeah, some fruit trees you have to have two or else they'll never bear fruit.
And not all of them, but some of them. Yeah. It's weird.
Because Trish has tried to explain it to me because she's planted some fruit trees that haven't so much worked out, but she has dreams. She planted some currant bushes that worked real well. This might be another thing, though, like when I was talking about my favorite vegetable being garlic or green onion. I don't know how I would do in a world without lemons or limes or the citrus family in general.
Yeah.
I am a huge fan, but I don't like eat them. And even oranges. I like oranges. But they are one of those foods that I'm like, it seems like more effort than it's, I don't know what to think. I have this problem with salad too. I really like salad, but salad takes effort to eat in a way that sometimes I'm just like, whatever. And oranges ain't, but like lemons and limes. Oh, I love lemons and limes. I love them. Chocolate and fruit. Flavor wise, not necessarily like here's a chunk of chocolate. Here's some fruit. You're a fan. Right?
Sure. I mean, there's some I would prefer more than others, but
I think people really underestimate chocolate and citrus. People are kind of on board with chocolate and orange now, but honestly, chocolate and lime, very good stuff. There used to be a candy store at the Oregon coast that would have, it was essentially like a fruit jelly that was like a stick shape, and then it was coated in chocolate. And they had all the different fruit flavors. And they were so good. And a lot of people kind of get thrown, but I think it's tasty. We, Zoet, Z-O-E-T, which I think might just be a house brand for Hy-Vee, makes dark chocolate bars. And they're fairly cheap. And they have a lot of interesting combinations. So we sometimes get them and they'll be like an after dinner, you know, snack or something. It's just a couple squares off of that. And they've got ones with pear in them. They got ones with orange and nut. There's one that's like black pepper and something, and it's really nice. So there's a few real neat ones there. So, and they cost like $2 for like, you know, good size bar. I like those.
Chocolate and chilies are good together.
Yes.
Which, if I recall correctly, the Aztecs would have a chocolate drink with chili. I mean, they'd spice it with chilies or something. And I remember hearing about that thinking, oh, that sounds actually pretty good. And then I found a chocolate bar somewhere that it was chocolate and chilies. And I thought, now this is going to be good. And it was. Boy, was it good. Really liked it.
I'm always disappointed in myself. That's it. That's the end of the sentence. I'm always disappointed in myself. No. Okay. Mole, which is the sort of savory chocolate sauce you get this a lot in the Southwest, and I think it's Mexican in origin. And I don't like it. It tastes like dirt to me. I want to like it. I'm like, I should like, and I love playing with sweet and savory and sweet, all that kind of thing. Nope. Don't like it.
Okay. I don't think I've even ever heard of that.
Yeah. We hadn't either. We learned a lot of interesting things like that when my sister moved to New Mexico. That's how we discovered green chilies and all sorts of, and green chili jam. My mother fell in love with that. It's a sweet jam, but it's got some kick to it. It's nice.
Yeah, I think I've had that.
I like spice. The older I get, the more I like spice, which is odd to me. I don't think it's to do with aging. I think it's to do with over time I get more daring and find that like, and I've talked before about the fact that I was like, one time I realized I have a pretty good tolerance for spice. And the odds are any like fast food places like spicy sandwich or whatever isn't going to be crazy because they want a lot of people to buy it. Right. And then I started buying all this good. Now, I don't know that that's still fucking true because now it's a big deal of like, oh, we have this will burn your face off. Like I go to Wendy's and they're like ghost pepper fry. I'm like, fuck right off. But in general, and it's a thing Trish and I work on now is putting sort of more spice in stuff. Because we both like a decent level of spice.
Yeah.
But with as a flavor, I don't like heat for heat. I've never liked heat for heat. And I'm not trying to push myself right. I have had spicy enough things that I get endorphins off of it.
Mm.
That's not what I'm going for.
Oh, okay.
I like the flavor involved.
Yeah. I think I'm the same way. Sometimes I've had things that like it apply, you know, where we used to work, they'd have a chili day or whatever. And sometimes
yes,
people sometimes people would make things just hot. I mean, you couldn't taste anything else.
No,
and that wasn't very fun.
You are telling the story so wrong. So
I wasn't really trying to tell a story, but
well, you should because it's a good story.
Oh, okay.
Proceed. So we used to have an annual chili cook-off at Applied.
Yeah.
And there was judging, and there were three categories. One was best tasting chili. One was most unusual chili.
Oh, yeah. Which
basically, David Dudziak would win every year because he would always source some weird fucking meats. One year he had actual lion meat in it. It was crazy.
Oh.
And the third was spiciest chili.
Yeah. Yep.
Until one year, when the spiciest chili caused multiple people to have to go home.
Oh, really? I don't remember that.
So, yeah, it was essentially like eating pepper spray.
Oh, gosh.
And people had to leave. I might be lying, but I think someone might have had to go for medical attention.
No way.
It was
wow, I didn't.
Bad. People were hurting. Like, it was bad. And after that year, when we had the chili cook-off, we judged on two categories. Tastiest and most unusual.
Hmm.
I'm surprised you... Maybe it was after... I don't think it was after. But yeah, no. Like, somebody... Because that's the thing. If your goal is to make something the spiciest, like, that's just chemistry.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That's exactly right. And when you're sending like people to the hospital,
only problem
you win.
Then... The only problem then is finding bowls that it won't eat through.
Right.
And somebody, and I don't remember who it was, maybe Dave Dudziak that year. Somebody finally put that two and two together and they won handily and we never did it again.
I don't remember that. Well, I mean, you know, I couldn't have
Guatemalan insanity peppers.
I couldn't have most of this and you know, things had meat in it and I couldn't have them. But there were some,
William's
sometimes
allergic to beans.
A person would bring in a vegetarian chili that was hot and that's all it was. Hardly any flavor at all, just heat. I'm not into that. But if it,
and they
you know,
make
it
those
can,
hot sauces that are just capsaicin, like just straight up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's always
just
weird
hot.
To me.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. But I do like, I mean, if something is flavorful and has some spice to it, yeah, I love that. That's great. I mean, when I grew up in a house, and it's still like this when I go home, nobody really eats. There's like five things that everybody eats, you know, and no onions. You can't have onions on anything. I mean, everything's plain. I grew up in a house like that. Even though when I got to college, I would pretty much, and I wasn't a vegetarian for the first couple of years of college, I would eat anything. And yeah. I loved it all. I thought it was great. And I didn't understand why the rest of my family didn't like really anything. I mean, it was the food they ate was so bland and ordinary. I couldn't figure it out.
I am still I still periodically get shocked when Trish says, you know, I never had food stuff until I was surprisingly old age. And just weird shit. Like, I don't think I had a plum until college. I'm like, Jesus.
I mean, I think I had a plum, yeah. A fresh one. Because I think our neighbors had a tree. But otherwise, yeah. We didn't have plums at home. No, we didn't have those.
That's amazing to me.
School lunches had plums, but they were canned. And so they were gross. Yeah, yeah.
My mom canned, because my mom did can for a while. And she canned plums, and they were some of the tastiest things I ever had. I love
them. Oh, sure. You can do it right. But if a lot of times you buy them in the store, the canned plums are terrible.
She also made the best applesauce in the world. And it was what I grew up on as applesauce. And what I remembered most about it is it was cinnamon flavored, and it was a dark, dark brown, like no other applesauce I have ever seen. And years later, I decided to make it myself, and I got the recipe from my mother, and I found out the reason I liked it so much is it had all of the sugar ever. It was, like, I'll put it this way. It was this far from being apple butter. And I ate it a lot, and it was real tasty.
Yeah, apple butter's really brown. I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I don't think of my, I mean, I do a little bit because I had wealthy relatives who lived nearby. And so, like, family get-togethers would sometimes happen at, like, really fancy restaurants and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I experienced, like, I remember I first had octopus when I was, like, 12.
Mm.
And it was just, we were out, I think we were at some buffet somewhere. They're like, oh, look, that's octopus. They're like, okay, so I tried it. So I guess I did have a real breadth of food growing up, but I don't ever think about it. It feels normal to me when I hear about other people. Other people lived like you had to live with my dad. I've said this before, right? So my dad retired when I was in high school and my mom was still working. So dad had to take over the cooking, and dad had no idea how to cook. He had never really cooked. Okay. And what he did, well, there's a lot of things. We bought him a book called Dad's Own Cookbook, which apparently is an amazing cookbook for people who don't know. I have a copy. I still need to read it because it just teaches you how to cook. Mm. Like, here's what braising is. Here's how it works. Things like that. It apparently famously has a chapter on how to turn a potato into a full meal. Things like a whole chapter. But so we got him that, and he learned something. And what he ended up doing, because he was responsible for cooking during the week. Not on the weekend. So he learned five meals. And he made those five meals on the same day of the week, every week. And I mean, certain things would change because it was usually some sort of meat, starch, vegetable. So the starch might be rice or it might be pasta. It might be seasoned different. The vegetable could be all sorts of things. But like the one I remember is Thursday, he made steaks. He would buy like the small sirloins, or the Thursday was steak, and there was a chicken day, and I forget what, but just same every week. He made sure he knew how to make those five meals, and that's what he did. And from what I've gathered, that maybe is how a lot of Midwestern rural people also live there.
I mean, I'd have to sit down and think about it, but I'll bet if I did, I'd come up with five or six things that were every single day, same thing over and over. And it's not that I didn't know there weren't other things, because sometimes the school lunches would be something different usually have at home. Or, you know, you'd go to a restaurant and see other things on a menu or whatever. But yeah, pretty much the same thing all the time. Now, my mom's appetite, she liked other things. I remember when I got older and I'd go with mom places, when I'd order different things, remembered there were other things on the menu, we would order them.
And Trish's family's palates as a whole have expanded. Some of that we've worked at it, some of it they've worked at it, things like that. So even like my sister-in-law Stephanie, who has like genuine issues with food and so has to eat things she also has worked to sort of expand her palate over the time and stuff, and she just figures out what she likes and then she makes sure she eats those things where she goes. But she has a lot of things and things she's discovered, but it there's a classic story my mother-in-law tells about Trish that I always loved is, so Trish was in school and she was young. I don't know how old. She was young enough that this was a school project they did that day. They had to draw a picture of their favorite meal.
Mm.
And so Trish did that and she got to take it home afterwards and she showed it to her mother. And the meal was cube steak with gravy, I think fried potatoes, maybe mashed potatoes. I don't remember, one of those, and green peas. But as I mentioned last week, Trish doesn't like green peas. And Trish's mother said, "You don't like green peas. Why is this here?" And Trish said, "Because it's supposed to be your favorite meal. And that's the meal." AKA, she had never had cube steak and mashed potatoes without there also being peas. So in her mind, it was a discrete unit. So that's the regularity with which they did things in that household.
This is how it comes in the frozen.
Like, yes. And I don't like this, but it's worth the other two things. It's worth it for the other two things rather than any other meal. This is the price I pay, and I'm willing to pay it.
That's interesting, because I was talking to someone about this just the other day about how when I was growing up, there was a point where, I mean, I can imagine doing that myself, because there's a point where you just, things are what they are, and there's nothing you could do about it. You can't ask for anything different. You can't change it. There's no point in asking, you know, like there were things that I might have wanted for my birthday or Christmas or whatever, but I could see how much it cost. And I knew my parents were never going to spend that kind of money. No point even asking. So I can see.
But this takes it to a point where somebody's like, draw what you want for Christmas. And you're like, I don't even want it anymore. Can I have a new pencil box?
Because it's kind of like that. Like if someone asked me to, like you said, to draw what I wanted for Christmas, I'm sure when I was 8 or 9 years old, I would not have drawn just whatever I dreamed of. I would have drawn whatever I thought I could get.
Except
whatever that was.
Fuck off. That's what you'd do if somebody told you that today.
Oh, well, that's probably true.
If somebody's like, if you could anything in your imagination, what would you most like for Christmas? You'd be like, well, what could I reasonably expect to ask for?
That's true. I probably would still do that. Yeah.
Because that's you. You are little like 6-year-old Trish to this day.
I learned my lesson well. I just don't. I mean, Abby likes to get lottery tickets.
Meanwhile, when we used to make Christmas lists in my in-laws family, I literally put a Prius on it like several years in a row. I mean, I put other things. I made sure there were things that people could actually buy, but I'm like, if you want to go crazy, I would have a list. And the Prius was used. There were other things that were pretty crazy. Although once I think I put a PlayStation on there and got it. But I would put a Prius on there all the time.
Yeah. Abby likes to play, get lottery tickets, you know, and she talks about her lottery dreams and all this stuff. But sometimes she'll ask, well, what would you do? I don't know. I think
mashed potatoes and green peas.
I just don't think like that. You know, I mean, if suddenly I had all that money, then I would figure it out. I suppose I think I'd give a lot of it away. I mean, I know I would. That's the first thing I think of whenever anybody asks me that, is I think of, you know, how I'd give some to my brothers and my dad and whatever. But you know, people always say, besides that, what would you do? Well, I don't know.
Do you fantasize very much?
I mean, I first of all, I have to try to understand what you mean by
that. Yeah, that's the thing. And that's people hear that and they think sex, which I mean, is a component, well, but no, I just know. Daydream about, like, imagine, because I'll do things like imagine that I had $1 billion. Other ones are imagine I would go back to an earlier part in my life, but with the memory I have now of things, just stuff like that. Imagine if I didn't have to worry about X. And I'll just a fun thing to do. Just daydreams, fantasies. I don't, I'll put it, I don't think I am unusual in that I do that.
Oh, no, I don't think you are.
I might be wrong. I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure you're not unusual that way. Because I hear other people talk like that, and I don't often
relate to it. That is the basis for being able to answer questions like, what's your goddamn favorite vegetable?
Now, I do...
Because at some point, we have fantasized about vegetables.
I do speculate a lot. I speculate about what's going to happen in the world. I speculate what will happen in my life.
But that is within the confines of reality.
Usually. Now, I can speculate, hopefully, too. Like, I can say, well, wouldn't it be nice if this happened, you know... wouldn't it be nice if things took this route? But like you just said, it's always a realistic, I mean, it's a thing that could happen based on what's happening right now. It's not winning the lottery or
so, and I'll going back in like, time. Like, yeah, what if I had become really good friends with Kumail Nanjiani? Like, and he and I had both after graduation moved to Chicago and tried to make it as stand-ups and things like that.
Now
it's ruined because then I don't meet Trish and that's sad. So I wouldn't want that. But given that, let's just play in the make-believe for a little while and see if I can be in a Marvel movie.
I do that where I'll go back and I'll think, well, what if I'd done this instead? And I'll do that because it might inform what I'll do now. So let's say if I think, what if Carl had told me earlier that he wasn't going to take any graduate students, and earlier I could have gone into communications and or journalism or something. Well, then what would have happened? And if I imagine what would have happened, then I can ask myself, well, is that a place I would have liked to end up? And if it is, how could I end up there now? You know what I mean? Can I go back to school in that? You know, that kind of thing. So I do think of stuff like that. But
you're the only person I know who conversations with you just make me want to take a nap. This is a valuable skill you have. I think it is a useful thing. There's an element you're missing. And this is the thing. What I'm talking about is just do it for fun.
Yeah, but it's not fun for me.
Why is it not fun for you to have $1 billion? $1 billion sounds fun. I want $1 billion.
I think of all the problems there would be with $1 billion. A lot of problems.
What problems? What problems you got with $1 billion?
Well, where would I put it? I mean, how would I invest it? What would I do?
Well, first of all, I'd give away most of it, and that would be fun as hell.
That's true. That would be fun, giving it away.
I mean, seriously, like, Googling, oh, what's like a really fucked up school somewhere. Oh, look, I'm gonna send them $1 million.
We run into this.
That's awesome.
Often, though, we run into this often where there's a certain thing that I don't do or won't do, and you'll be like, "Well, why don't you want to do that?" And you'll get right up to the point where you're thinking I lack imagination or initiative, but then I have to explain that I do some other thing instead. I mean, I'm not sitting doing nothing while everybody else is daydreaming or drinking beers or whatever.
What are you doing instead? What are you doing instead?
For example, I'm speculating about things and I think that's fun. Or I'm reading about a topic that I'm interested in, or I'm writing about a topic I'm interested in and I think that's fun. You know, I just do something else that's fun for me that makes you want to go to sleep.
No. All those things are fine. Listening to you is what makes me.
You know, I just do something else.
No, but then this is a counter here, because you said you speculate to inform future decisions, but now you're also saying that you also do it because it's fun. That means you are doing it you're doing it for fun. You just are also a super nerd, so you're also doing something arguably productive at the same time.
Well, right.
And that I can, if not respect, I can understand.
Yeah,
but it does eliminate you from all the speculations that are way out there.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, like working on the speculative fiction I've worked on is fun. I mean, it does create this piece of work that I want to do something with, but it also is enjoyable to me. And sometimes that goes in places that I wouldn't normally think about as like an actual future, you know, the fictional stuff. And some of the stuff that I've been doing that's in like supernatural fiction is, you know, to me, it's speculation of a different kind, but it's definitely not realistic.
This is interesting, though, because I just hit on a major difference in the thing I'm talking about and the thing you're talking about. And it's not because it's written down and stuff like that. All the instances you're talking about, you're speculating not as you. You're not writing a story about what if I went to space or whatever it is. No. It's whatever character you created.
Yeah. Yep.
I think that is significant if you're claiming that that is your alternate to what I'm talking about. I think it is significant that you're not thinking in terms of yourself. How that is significant, I could not tell you without a lot of pointing and shouting. And I don't think I'm qualified to point and shout to that degree. But yeah, I think that is
shouting.
Significant. You know, I've done it if I won the lottery. And sometimes it's just there's shit that would be fun to do if I had crazy amounts of money. And sometimes it's regrets I had back in the day that I'm like, if I could go back now, I know how I'd do that. That'd be way cooler now. And let's be totally honest. It's me. Sometimes it's, you know, with the knowledge I have now, I could go back in time and get laid a lot more. And, you know, whatever. Fantasies are fantasies. But I used to do the lottery one. I don't do the lottery one as much now because there's just so much horror story around lottery winners. Like, you can't find a lottery winner who's happy. Like, it's just, it ruins lives. And also, I'm just ethically really opposed to the lottery, which is super funny. Oh, my God. I need to talk about this. I haven't talked about this the other day. So, oh, sorry. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magic Talking Podcast, only in the world. Tony, William, what number?
581.
All right.
No, if you're 582.
581
was the last.
You have one job. If you're just listening for the first time, go back one episode and then start. Anyway. Yes. That's why you said it, is you were trying to help them.
I was helping.
I get you. So, Final Fantasy 14. We're going to talk about that. I hear a lot of listeners groaning.
Well, you're going to talk about that.
Yes. I would love to watch you talk about it, but no. Okay. So, there is an aspect to this game that I only recently in the last couple of weeks, maybe a few weeks, I don't know, have gotten into. It is an optional portion of the game that I have decided to try out.
Okay.
And it is a casino.
Oh.
Yes. And in fact, it is inspired partially because in one of the most famous and successful Final Fantasy games, Final Fantasy VII, there was a casino you went to for part of it, and it just was an excuse to have a lot of mini games. So there were fun little things you could play there. And then there were plot lines and stuff that happened too while you were there, and it was part of the story. But people really enjoyed that. And so this is a variation of that, but also the Final Fantasy series have kind of incorporated these things because people like them. And it's people, when you have a giant RPG, it's fun to find reasons to stick mini games in them. Sometimes it's a card game that everybody plays throughout the world and you can play different people as you go through the story, but casino's the easy one. So anyway, there's this casino. In the casino, they have their own currency, essentially, as many places do. They're called MGP. It stands for what the place is called or whatever. They have their own casino points. And it's not like other money. And you can't go other places and spend it. You can only spend it there. And part of the reason it's optional is most of the things in the casino are cosmetic. I can buy new clothes that aren't like powerful armor. They just look cool or whatever. I can buy new little pets, I can buy mounts, I can buy accessories, things like that, unlock new hairstyles and things like that. And so and what I found very interesting is when you first go, you can purchase some of this currency with the real money in the game, which isn't real money, but it's the main currency within the world of Final Fantasy XIV.
Okay.
You can only purchase a very small amount. Well, comparatively, you can only spend a very small amount of actual money to buy this. And if you have more than X amount of the casino's currency, you cannot purchase any more with real money or with real money. Also, most of the things there return on invest, like return on, it is hard to lose a lot of the casino points at this casino.
Okay.
You could do it, but it's pretty hard. Even the things that are like random lottery things, like there's a big weekly lotto thing that you do, and it's as hard to win as any of those things are, but they have a consolation prize if you don't get any of the numbers, and the consolation prize is significantly higher than what I paid for the ticket.
Okay.
So you don't in general lose money. And I remember shortly after I started doing this and playing a lot of these, and I went around and I played all the games and stuff like that to try them out, and some of them are dumb, but whatever. Two things happened. One, I got sucked in real fast. There's a thing that's essentially scratch-off tickets, and you can only do three of them per day. And nowadays, it changes at 10 o'clock, and around 10 o'clock, I will log into my damn PlayStation so I can go and get three scratch tickets every day. And I've got a thing that, like, I've got a strategy that actually kind of works, but it's not huge and I'm not winning tons off of it, but like I do it and it's really compelling that like I have to go, like I spend surprising amount of time at the casino is what I'm saying. But what I also love is I understand about casinos as a concept, and I understand a lot of the tricks, and I understand how they make money and all that kind of thing. And I remember being like, it's kind of refreshing that they won't just let you spend a bunch of your actual money on stupid cosmetic stuff. And also that the odds aren't nearly as stacked against you as a lot of places. This is like a nice casino. It's really good that they did that. I'm kind of impressed. It's kind of progressive. And then my brain was like, dude, the money they're getting from you is $15 a week in actual American dollars. This casino is not built for this casino to make money. This casino is built to distract you so that you keep forking over $15 a month for the game. The whole point of this casino is to entertain you. They don't actually care about you spending money there because that's not a thing. And it took me a while to come to, before I was like, wow, this is really kind of, because I'll be honest, a lot of games that like to incorporate this stuff, the odds still suck.
Oh yeah, they try.
To make it realistic or something. But this one, I was like, yeah, they're real sort of good about it. And I'm like, of course they are, because this isn't the money. The money is your subscription fee, and the way they keep you doing that is by keeping you entertained. And you probably wouldn't be entertained if you were losing a lot of money to this fake casino. But it cracked me up. I love those moments when I have a realization that's like, I actively dislike me from 30 seconds ago for having been that dumb. Like, I'm mad at myself that I was that guy was an idiot. So yeah, I play at that casino a lot, and I play those scratch tickets around. And I do get cool. I'm getting cool outfits and things like that. It's fun. They have a collectible card game. Where like you have numbers on it and you put them on a board like tic-tac-toe, and if what the numbers do like flips them over and stuff, and it's deceptively simple, and I don't like it that well, and yet it's incredibly addictive. Very, very dangerous. I could lose all of my money. No, wait, I couldn't. You've just spent a week in Phoenix.
Well, I'm still there when people are watching.
Oh my God. How's it feeling? Your hotel room wall looks really boring. No artwork or anything.
So yeah, let me see if I
gotta
can
say,
think I what am, I'd be doing.
I appreciate that you got to do all this shit and you have to take another class at the same time. And I would probably make the same decision you did. And I think that's fair. I will be honest, though. I am incredibly disappointed that we are not recording this with you in your hotel room in Phoenix. I don't know why. I'm just super jazzed about that idea of you being in a hotel room somewhere and recording this podcast. I don't know why. It sounds cool. But I appreciate why you made that decision. And I think that's fair.
So
I just think
what's next week at this time, not only will I be in Phoenix, but this will be. This will have been the first full day because I will have arrived on Wednesday.
Oh, you don't arrive till Wednesday. I thought you were there for the whole like week. Mm-mm. How long are you there for?
For the you know, half of Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And you'll be half doing shit. You don't get that time off.
No. No,
which sometimes they do if it's like a conference that goes like 2 weeks or whatever, they don't schedule things on the weekend. So sometimes, but so you're doing, so it's for real Saturday and then you leave Sunday.
Yep. There's a class period on Wednesday and there are four class periods on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and a morning class session on Sunday. So yeah, it's
gonna awful.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it'll be part of it'll be fun, obviously, meeting some people that I've already met. I mean, these are people who have been in other classes and who I've talked to
them online.
Mostly. And the actually the professor, I've actually had in another class before. So I'm even already acquainted with this person. So it'll be kind of fun to meet everybody and the classes are going to involve, like you were saying last time, pointing and shouting. Well, anyway, pairing up and doing, you know, role plays of the therapy thing. So you can get feedback from, you know, a real therapist to tell you, oh, well, you should, you know, maybe you should have listened more then, or, you know,
less pointing, more shouting.
Well, it's here's the thing. So
get the finger closer to their face.
Carl Rogers had this amazing idea. I'm being a little sarcastic because this Carl Rogers is someone who's sort of held up as almost a saint, this guy, because he got therapists to think more about showing empathy and unconditional positive regard and things like that. And it wasn't that he was the first person to ever think of this or something, but he did do something that nobody else seemed to be doing, which was to say, maybe this isn't just the polite thing to do or the thing that, you know, a diplomatic or a nice person does. Maybe this is actually therapeutic, right? Like maybe all of you therapists who think you should be aloof and standoffish toward your clients aren't just being kind of jerks, but you're actually not being as therapeutic as you could be. So he was calling for like to sort of formalize the process and testing it to see if, can we test it to see if having a particular attitude toward your client is actually more therapeutic, which I think was actually pretty clever. I remember though, for a long time hearing about Carl Rogers and thinking, why do you guys celebrate this guy just because he came up with the very pedestrian idea of being nice to your client? But it was more than that. He was realizing that, you know, we can treat this as a theoretical concept and test it, because, you know, it's one thing to say, well, just, you know, show your client that you give a damn, you know, and connect with them and empathetically. I mean, that's just a nice thing to do, but it's quite another thing to say, is it actually in a way we can test therapeutic?
And I am so not, that's what he suggested. I am not loving the experimental model here. Like, and these people are in the your therapist is a total dick group. And we're going to see if maybe they have less progress.
Well,
like this one, everything the patient says, the therapist has to go, and write some shit down every time they talk.
Now, keep in mind, he was doing this at Rogers was doing this at a time where it was kind of popular. The behaviorist school was like, we have to get people to behave a certain way, and that's rewards and punishments, and sometimes you have to be confrontational. I mean, you know, there was some of that. There was some thought that the way to help a person was to be direct with them. Now, don't worry about hurting their feelings or insulting them.
See, I want to do the passive aggressive one. So you ask them a question, they answer, and you're like, really? That's what you're going with. Okay. Anyways. Okay.
So,
I bet that would be very ineffective.
When we get together, they're really going to be emphasizing, I think they're going to be emphasizing certain methods that Rogers suggested to help the client open up, because, you know, they're specifically wanting you to avoid giving advice or sharing your judgment about what they're saying, right? So even saying something like, oh, wow, that sounds terrible or whatever, you know, just to not say or do anything that's going to make the client take a certain direction in what they're telling you, other than their own direction, right? But you don't want to be standoffish. That's
my biggest strength. If I wanted to become a therapist, I'd be really good at that part.
I'm not leading them around by your own opinion.
Yeah, yeah, not expressing my view.
Yeah, you'd be great at that. Mm. No, but it's a challenge, right? Because when people think, okay, well, I'm not going to give input so that they'll be led by what I say. Well, then they just back off and shut down.
Yes, yes.
No.
I would be as unto a speaking spell.
No, you still have to be connected in there, and so they know that you are. That you're feeling what they're feeling, that you understand what they're saying, but also that they can feel comfortable saying whatever they want, that they shouldn't feel like they're being judged or examined, you know? So it's tricky, right? It's tricky
Is that anything that. As unto a speaking spell? I don't feel like it was a good joke, but I love the phrase and I kind of want to make it the title.
I like it.
As unto a speaking
spell. As unto a speaking spell. No, but if you think about how do you do all those things? How do you show intense interest in being non-judgmental while you don't share any of your own opinion? How do you?
I don't. That's craziness.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. So,
and I think I'm not. That might be a reductive way of phrasing it, because like I wouldn't. My therapist is very good, and I wouldn't say she shares no views on stuff. She doesn't lead me. But like, if I'm saying something that is clear that it sucks for me, she'll say like, that sounds like it sucks for you.
And the truth is, I'm sure that in the real world, experienced therapists will do stuff like that all the time. But we're new at this. So they're trying to kind of give us the rarefied, really strict version so that we can learn how to do it. And then maybe
once it becomes reflexive, then you can play around with it. That makes a lot of sense. Well, it's the same classic thing. Like anybody who's ever done a fine art or a performing art gets really annoyed when they have to go to school for it. And they're like, why do I have to see what other people? And it's like, well, because there are certain structures that are helpful and you need to learn those so that then you can effectively branch from there.
Right.
And once in a blue moon, you'll have somebody who's a real good untrained therapist, like me. But overall, it's really more helpful if you can take the body of knowledge, internalize it, and then grow from that.
Yeah. And the thing is, I actually agree with this general approach. And I also understand.
Oh, you're in favor of not being a dick, are you? Oh, wow. What a refreshing take on
that. No, what I mean is... What I mean is,
I'd say that was virtue signaling, but I'm not sure it was enough.
That's not what I mean. What I mean is
normal human being signaling.
If I
eat food and breathe.
If I were to start as a therapist, I would not be able to do this very well. I wouldn't be mean, but I would. One mistake I know I would make is asking too many questions, because I'm interested. I'm just interested in what the person has to say. But the problem is when you do that, you start to lead, you know, the questions you ask are leading where the conversation's going, yeah, first of all. And like, second of all,
really?
Some people, second of all, some people can feel, you know, scrutinized and over-examined by that, which I've experienced in my personal life. I've experienced people feeling like I'm interrogating them when I'm just interested. So I need to learn
all the time. All the time. I keep waiting for the day when you get enough infidels to charge me with something.
Another thing I need to learn is what to say, because I tend to use language that's too that's not specific enough or simple enough. You know, I need to use words that most people are going to associate with basic emotions like happiness and sadness and things like that. I can't get all literary or poetic with what I'm saying. I got to stop doing that.
Other side, fucking semantic.
Yeah, that too.
You can't be asking people, I assume we're going with our standard definition of vegetables.
Right.
Can't do that as a therapist.
That's right.
I had a therapist say that exact sentence one time. I walked out and everyone.
Again, there's a lot of things that you do in normal conversation, even when you're talking to a friend that you're offering help to, that you shouldn't do in a therapist situation.
And also, you and I like to play in this space. I genuinely think this podcast and our friendship as a whole is probably an obstacle towards you becoming a successful therapist. I think this here, we do a masterclass in how not to do it.
Yes. So I'm looking for, this is my way of all this is my way of saying, I'm looking forward to the experience and also to learning some things that I know I need to learn if I'm going to be an effective clinician. So I'm really looking forward to it. And I think I will learn a lot from it. And so it'll be great, I think.
Are you looking forward at all to just the basic travel aspect?
Well, no.
I should rephrase. Not the actual travel, but the visiting someplace new.
Oh, well, I'm not sure.
The flight's gonna suck because it's air travel. I understand that. But I mean getting there and even if it's just a conference center or a hotel or whatever, I always have a little bit. It's just new. It's fun to see new places.
Sure. I mean I'd sooner it not just be the hotel and the restaurant. But I mean maybe.
Absolutely.
It might be that, and that's fine. If it ends up being more than that, sure, I am looking forward to that. If I can get out and see some things or go some places with
It'll be a cool hotel. Maybe they'll have really good breakfast.
Possible. I mean, I don't, you know, when I travel, the place I stay is pretty much the last thing I'm interested in, but hopefully
I'll. And I will, for all the shit I give about Arizona, you can probably find some really good Mexican food in Phoenix.
Well, maybe. Yeah. So
there's a lot of Hispanic population down there too. So
yeah, but
Phoenix, but
the flying, no, I'm not. But once I get there, I'll be glad I'm there. And I'm, like you said, see new place and experience new things. That will be fun, I think.
And I'm betting Abby is just over the moon at having the place to herself for a few days.
She's not.
I've already got the invite to the fucking rave that we're having.
I joke
the night you leave.
I asked her. I said, "What are you gonna do? I'm gone. You have a big party." She said, "No." I think she wants to paint this room. It might be that next time we have a podcast, if I'm in here again, the background will be a different color. But maybe
I would love that. That'd be funny. No, I don't want to just paint. I want a mural behind you.
Oh well, probably
I'm gonna leave it up to her what it is. Robots fighting dinosaurs would be nice, but I'm not gonna require it. Robots fighting dinosaurs.
I like the robots part. I'm not sure about
that. What do you have against dinosaurs? You might be history's greatest monster. I'm not sure. Did you never want to be a paleontologist?
No, I was one of those rare kids that didn't really have much.
I was going to say, I think did you ever want to be a marine biologist?
No.
That's the other big one. Nope. Kids want to be paleontologists and marine, or maybe certain kinds of kids, but a lot of kids want to be those things.
I wanted to be a doctor. That was it. I don't remember fantasizing about being anything else.
To be fair, you had strict conservative Indian parents. Or did you just really love the doctor on Little House on the Prairie?
No, I don't know why.
I just recently was told / reminded, because I don't remember if I knew this before, of the series finale of Little House on the Prairie. Do you remember the series finale of Little House on the Prairie?
I mean, I'd be surprised if I didn't see it, but I don't remember it.
Somebody comes in and wants to buy the town and develop it. Hmm. And the locals don't want that. So far, pretty cross the plate, normal plot line. So the solution they come with up with.
Did you say across the plate? Did you just use a baseball analogy?
Oh, God, come on. We're all stuck in there.
Can't believe it.
They're there. It doesn't mean we like it. I refer to things as a layup sometimes. I understand sports metaphors. I understand metaphors, even if it's them. Yeah, no, okay. There's a plate, right?
Yeah.
It goes across the strike zone.
The strike zone. Man, you are good. I'm so proud of you.
I know all of the, I might know what the designated hitter rule is.
Oh, okay.
And I might have a slightly better understanding of it than the offsides rule in soccer. I don't know. Anyway, so pretty straightforward route one plot line here.
Okay.
The solution, which the people of Walnut Grove execute and succeed in, is not. In order to keep the developer from purchasing up the town and developing it, they blow it up. They blow up the town. Now, I feel it is crucial, while you are in the state of disorientation, to add to it, this does not stop the developer from purchasing the land. They cannot rebuild there. They all pick up and move somewhere else to build a new town. The end of the show. Like, the first part I get, and it's a very classic sort of story. The second part is literally the townsfolk of Walnut Grove saying, well, if we can't have it, no one can. We are taking our toys and blowing them the fuck up. That is the pettiest shit. They blew up their town so that other people couldn't have it and didn't save it for them. Like, if anything, this is cutting off their nose to spite their face. They're making stuff. Because they also, I don't think they got any money for it, if it's exploded. Like, how is that the ending?
I don't know.
That's fucked up.
I didn't know that's how it ended.
Yeah, no, I recently watched a thing that was talking about absolute batshit TV series. And, you know, they had Saint Elsewhere in there and some of the classics. But yeah, they had Little House. And the problem is, it was late enough along, like, not a lot. Little House on the Prairie stayed on the air quite a while after it was no longer watched by very many people, I think.
Yeah, right.
If you talk to people about the point that we got adult Laura Ingalls and Married to Manly, all that stuff, nobody was really paying attention. You know, when the stories were more about that kid that the shop owners adopted, Albert, I guess Michael, when Michael Annan was mostly gone, that wasn't, people didn't watch as much, but I'm like, shit, I didn't remember that one. That's insane. Well, we didn't get to any questions because weirdly, this was a higher energy episode than the one we just did an hour earlier. I guess we had to get into the groove. Maybe we should start recording them like a month at a time. Just do them all.
Do four and then 3 weeks off. We're just
like, yeah. This Thursday, we're doing nothing but recording. Let's see how many episodes we can get through We'll get here at 9 and we'll go through until I have to make dinner. And we'll see how many episodes, and then we won't come back for that many weeks. I don't know what I'm going to do with my Thursday afternoon. Probably spend it in the casino. Maybe I'll learn to play Mahjong. In the meantime, though, do keep writing in, everyone, please. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Because we need, despite what it looks like here, we do need your emails for our peace of mind, if nothing else. Also, go to the blog, TheMagicalTalkingHat.com, and tell us your favorite fruits and vegetables. Tell me how I'm wrong about Arizona. And talk about which of the two of us you think would make the best therapist.
We didn't really audition. We didn't do enough pointing.
I am constantly auditioning to be people's therapists in all walks of life. Mm-hmm. And keep listening. If you're on YouTube, like, subscribe, I guess. That's what they say, right? I have a book. It's called Odd Wings. It's on a site called smashwords.com. If you look for Odd Wings or Anthony K. Parsons, you can find it. It costs like $3. You can get it in any digital format you want. I think it's good.
Yeah, it's really good.
You read it. You should read it. You should tell other people about it. Make them read it. Give them your copy. I don't really care about the money. But if you do give them your copy, tell me about it. I want to know people reading it. It's going to get more. I'm working on the second one. So do that. And come back next week where hopefully Arizona will have given us back William. If not, I mean, take all of your podcasting equipment with you just in case you're stuck there.
Oh, sure.
All right. Or don't, and I'll audition co-host next week. We'll try that. Oh, somebody new.
Sure.
Maybe you. If you'd like to co-host this show, go to themagicaltalkinghat.com and list your CV.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.